With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Soul Sisters podcast. We have a really fun episode to share with you today, but we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that it's been a very sad and trying week for our country and the music community. And we didn't want to give a fun little intro without just acknowledging what's going on. Also because the shootings that happened in Orlando this weekend, that took place in a LGBT nightclub, and also the shooting of the singer Christina Grimmie. In a way, well, I don't know how to put this, but our guest today is Lena Hall, and Lena won a Tony Award for her portrayal of a character named Yitzhak in Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And because of that role, she has become a very celebrated figure in the Broadway community and in the LGBT community, which we spoke about with her. And we spoke about a lot of things with her that I think we should focus on when stuff like this is going on. It's all about bringing all of us together, all the stuff that we're doing, music and art and the stories that we're all trying to tell. It's all that we can do. It's all that we can control is, sharing these experiences and trying to understand each other better.
I think you said it.
So, okay. On that note, this is a really
Lena's
lovely...
Lena's a really wonderful... I wouldn't say spokesperson, but she's really sort of come into a role of being a positive role model and someone who's portraying characters and like actively sort of, fitting into that world of portrayal that she didn't have to, that was a choice and that was an active choice. And she'll talk about that. And that's incredible, and she's done a brilliant job at it. But people like Lena are leading the charge from an artistic perspective, and for all of us.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's entertainment, but it can also be a lot more powerful than that. So this is a I don't know. In a way, this episode is a fitting tribute to that. So that's it. Here's Soul Sisters with Lena Hall.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Just keeping the Memorial Day weekend going.
Always.
Yeah.
It's permanent Memorial Day week.
Oh, really? Tell us about that. What's the secret to that vibe?
The secret to that is just don't do anything.
Well, that's not true. You do things.
That's true. No, that's true. I do not have a permanent.
But that's why it's amazing, because maybe you didn't really do anything, and it's like that's the best feeling when you're so busy all the time.
Yeah, it's true, except for the fact that after just a few days of not doing anything, I get really antsy. Mm-hmm. I was just down in the Keys for Memorial Day weekend, and I I was in someone else's house, and I love relaxing. I had a really good time. It was beautiful. I was always on a boat, but I found myself getting to the point where I was getting antsy because I didn't have anything to do that was productive.
Yeah.
Instead of like eat.
Yeah.
And
it's like, it feels great. You think that's the dream.
Yeah. And
you can't.
So we've been debating this, like, is that a healthy thing or not?
I don't
have that
know.
Itch?
I don't know, but I ended up...
Be able to enjoy the nothingness.
Oh, it can't be a good thing, because I ended up organizing the entire kitchen. Like, taking everything out of the kitchen cabinets and then, like, reorganizing everything and putting it back. I was like, there you go. You're welcome.
It's so satisfying to do.
It is. But did it need to happen?
No, probably not. But
I'm sure someone appreciated it.
Well, I was like, you're welcome.
Yeah. You made sure.
You're going to be happy.
Thank
I did
me now.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is songwriting a thing, like, for your own band or writing in general? Like, is that something if you're sort of unplugged from life and you're not doing other things, you could say, oh, well, I'm going to do this now. Like, I'm going to.
No, because, you know, I find that, well, Michael Jackson said it best. You can't, like, plan to write something. It just has to come to you. It's like it comes from somewhere beyond. And
I have a counterpoint to that.
That's why I'm a writer.
You know, some people, they are like, all right, well, I have to write something. And so then they go ahead and write it. But I think, you know, I'm a firm believer in, like, unless you're really inspired by something going on, then it's kind of hard to write. So, like, I don't. Like, well, I'm sure, you know, people who have lots of time who are like just sitting there and they have a guitar. I didn't have a guitar out there. And they have a guitar and they're just screwing around with the chords and stuff like that. I'm sure then eventually they get inspired and they start to write something and something just comes out of that.
Well, because my quote is from Picasso, who said, you have to show up for the muse, meaning you got to like go there every day and then it will come to you.
Oh, well, yeah, yes. Then it'll come to you, which is that same thing that Michael Jackson was talking about.
It's not going to come without you giving yourself.
Exactly. The moment. Yeah. To it. I didn't have a guitar out there, so I clearly didn't write anything. Maybe if I had a guitar and I was just futzing around and I had it in my hands, then yeah, it would come to me. But
so you could have been working harder is what
I
I'm saying.
I could have been working harder instead of organizing someone's kitchen.
Well done. That's a nice, that's a great way to come back and feel revived to do it later.
Right, true. You know? Yeah, true. And also,
like, you want to go on vacation with your work.
Yeah.
Not like guitar, you know, you could look at the guitar in different ways. Is it work? Is it whatever? But
it's pleasure for sure.
Yeah, but if it makes you feel like I have to sit and let the muse happen and all then it's hard.
Yeah, it's our opposing ideas. We will agree to disagree.
Well, I also wonder if it's different from like songwriting to other kinds of writing. Like, I wonder if it depends on what your thing is, too.
Well, apparently, like, who was it? He would sit and stare at a piece of marble for months and months and months and just stare at a piece of marble. And people would be like, what is wrong? I think it was Michelangelo who would stare at a piece of marble. And then one day, he would get up and he would make it happen. And like, I was like, you know what? I get that. Like, I'll stare at something that I have to do and I'll stare at it and it'll ponder and ponder and ponder. People are like, are you doing anything? Are you making it happen? Are you putting it together? Are you writing anything? I'm like, look,
just part of
give,
it.
Just give me That's my moment. And then all of a sudden one day it'll be like, boom. And then in a day I'll have it all planned out, ready to go. So it's like, it's some of us are more, I think we all work in different ways. Some of us are more ponderers and need to take a moment to kind of maybe plan out or let the space change or kind of let it ruminate, let it bake, like, you know, like cook a little. And then other people, they can just, you know, they can do it raw right away. Like, they can just get it out on paper. They work different
Fuck
ways.
Those
so.
No one likes those people. They shouldn't share those stories.
I know, right?
Do you do the writing for The Deafening?
I don't actually. Okay. And right now we're on a real hiatus from doing anything.
Yeah. Cause you have too much other
I have
stuff going on.
Way too many things going on. And two of our members had babies. And so that's Life. Kind of difficult. Yeah. And our drummer lives in Chicago and he just had a baby too. And so, like, it's kind of like we all kind of dispersed and turned into our, but we were together for 9 years, you know? And so I think it was time to like take a break, from it and just kind of work on our own lives. well, they found me on MySpace because that was, you know, MySpace was popular then. And
what did you have on MySpace?
I don't even know. I was just a profile. It said singer, like, and like the guitarist. He did a general search for New York singer.
Uh-huh. You know, who, Broadway between the ages. Then, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'd been in, I don't know, 4 Broadway shows by then, and so they were like, "Hey, will you audition for our band? We're a joke band called Cocaine the Band," and basically, I mean, I love this story. So it's all original music, but it's based in 80s kind of pop rock. And the band, there's a backstory for the band. We were the greatest band in the 80s, and our manager had us cryogenically frozen in the early 90s so we could save rock and roll in the future. And I loved that. And and the, you know, the guys wore like Miami Vice suits and mullets, and we had a Cuban drummer.
Was that your
drummer.
Genre already? Like, you already love that kind of music?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I love like 80s hard rock. Yeah. It's so much fun. It's, you know, like Pour Some Sugar on Me, uh-huh, or Girls, yeah. Girls, Girls. Like, yeah. It's just fun, decadent. It's a, uh-huh, you know, great decadent time period. And the whole idea of the band was kind of a comment on how overindulgent the 80s were, things like that, mm-hmm, you know? And so I auditioned for them and I got the job. It wasn't really a job, but like, they were like, "Hey, you want to be our singer?" I was like, "Cool." And this is actually right after I had my tonsils removed.
Holy shit.
and then just through singing with them, with these guys who are self-taught musicians who were always in bands, you know, they weren't like the musicians I was usually working with, and they wouldn't change keys, you know, they were like, "No, we want to keep it in this key because it's like open guitar chords." Yeah. And so you have to figure out how you can sing it. Uh-huh. And then, you know, they broke me down. They broke me from this little adorable musical theater like nerd, and then they broke me into this like awesome rock singer. So like, just from you know, not turning down their guitars in rehearsals, yeah, playing really loud, playing open chords, like writing everything in the stratosphere for me, and then being like, "We want you to sound like Lemmy from Motorhead, or like, you know, Axl Rose, or like do all, you know, or like Bon Scott." I'm like, "What?" And so, just through necessity of not wanting them to make fun of me anymore, I figured out how to sing basically the way I sing now.
Yeah. Wow. So that happened through the band.
Yeah. Through Cocaine
and then
the Band.
Back into your Broadway.
And then
right.
It came back, yeah.
Right. Were you like pretty much a traditional Broadway musical theater lover before that?
Well, I loved musical theater and I was good at it. But I was always kind of based in rock and roll. I loved rock and roll. Like, I listened to rock and roll all the time. Heart was like my favorite band of all time. I had written a show using the music of Heart, even though that they totally rejected me on my idea, but whatever. And
someday.
So, yeah. And so I always loved singing that genre. I guess it was more musical theater than I thought. And just from singing with this band, it really kind of like was my education in how to sing like crap, you know, like it's not like crap. I mean, it's good. It's just like how to let go of the perfection that we're taught in musical theater and in opera and vocal, uh-huh, and how to let go of the perfection and actually embrace all the imperfections that make your voice interesting and cool and something that people want to relate to more, and also something maybe that sounds more dangerous.
Definitely. Yeah. Uh-huh. Is it harder to maintain a healthy practice with that? I mean, singing in that way seems just like more challenging.
Well, yeah, it seems dangerous, right? But what's interesting is that it comes from a place that it's like a technique thing. It's like this uber technique.
You have to learn.
Yeah, it's an uber technique that it's almost like a parlor trick. And once you learn it, you're like, yeah, that's right. I got it. And so like you can do it and you never ruin your voice. And I'm pretty convinced that, you know, there's a few people who really do it. And I was actually watching, Nirvana Unplugged the other day. And I was watching, you know, I was watching Kurt Cobain like scream and sing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Mm-mm. He's not like, it's not like crazy hard on him. Like, he's just sitting there like, it's very calm, like the way he's doing it. So I am convinced that it was coming from this specific place, mm-hmm. That's that techniques where you can scream and do it constantly and it never hurts your voice because it's from a totally different place.
Right. Because there is a way to do it wrong.
There is a way. Yeah. Oh, and you'll screw it up in 5 seconds. Right. It takes no time.
I wish I could play this Rihanna track for you right now. It's on her new album because there's this one really short song where she's singing super high and screaming it. And every time it comes on, I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, she's killing her voice right now. It sounds so unhealthy.
I wonder.
And I wonder if she performs that song because it just sounds fucking wrong. It sounds like exactly the opposite of what you're talking
about. The opposite,
about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can kind of tell where it's coming from when you watch someone perform, uh-huh. because you just can see there's like a calmness, mm-hmm. that comes when you're
and
like,
and the face doesn't wrangle and get all crazy. And,
right. Well, and also like, there's like, I don't know. You watch a person and it's like when they're singing, if you see like a ton of stress in their shoulders and neck, then you know that it's a little harder than maybe it should be. And if it's a really relaxed and they seem super duper relaxed, then you know that they've got some technique going on. So I would be curious to see Rihanna actually sing that. Because then if you watch her and you feel a little more relaxed, exactly. If you see that she's kind of relaxed while she's doing it, she's probably doing it in the right place. Yeah, it's just, it's like, but what makes it cool is that dangerous thing, that dangerous quality. Like that person, like John Lennon is another good one. Like, I mean, he sings and it sounds like he's killing himself, uh-huh. you know? It sounds like it's coming, it's like a scream, it's a guttural thing. It mm-hmm. sounds so soulful, so, you know, hurt, or there's like a lot of emotion involved. But, you know, I think, you know, there's this a certain technique that comes from it that is a safe thing where you can always do it. Mm-hmm. So not to like, this is like really technical. What are we talking about?
We go there.
Down. Because it's also interesting. I mean, not to keep dwelling in this, but that being a Broadway star and performing these kinds of shows, you know, 7 times a week.
Yeah. Yeah. 8 shows a week.
Shows a week for roles that don't require this kind of dangerous, this kind of rock and roll singing, there's almost a more of a preciousness that you need to take with your voice in the interim when you're not performing. So it's kind of nice for you. Is that true that you kind of get to be more relaxed when you're not on stage and not be so worried about how much you're using your voice and all that?
It's different for, you know, different strokes for different folks. Sure. Really. Like some people.
What's your stroke?
My stroke is really crazy. People think I'm crazy. So I like to totally challenge myself 100%. So I like to push myself to my utter limit and then beyond, because it makes me a stronger performer and a stronger singer. And I'm always one to keep growing and keep expanding what I can do and how much hell I can put myself through, basically. I mean, like, I grew up in the ballet world, and the ballet world is so dark. And and so, you know, I came from that kind of thought of, you know, that you just want to get to your body's utter limits. And so I have that same kind of perspective going in to theater. And 8 shows a week for me, depending on what it is, you know, it's a tough schedule. But once you start getting into it, you get the momentum, you get the stamina. Like, then I personally, being crazy, will add things. So when I was doing Hedwig, which was actually only 7 shows a week, but it was still, you know, it was still a lot.
Yeah.
I would add, you know, shows with my band, shows with other things. Like, I would just add all these like late night shows. I would go. So I would do, you know, 2 shows of Hedwig, and then I'd bolt off and do a show with my band afterwards. So I'd do that all the time. Or I would never take a day off. Like, I'd do stuff on my days off.
How do you look back on that now? Are you like, that was
crazy,
or was it like,
or risky? Like,
no, it makes sense. Yeah. Because, you know, so like, I don't know, it was announced that I'm going back into Hedwig and I'm doing the tour.
Yeah.
And I'm coming back to do Yitzhak, and you know, I've already conquered that role, and I didn't feel the need to come back and do it, although I really wanted to come back home to San Francisco, because I've never done a big production in my hometown ever, and I grew up in the Haight-Ashbury. Like, my parents are like known in the San Francisco, you know,
for what?
Community. My dad, he had a ballet company in San Francisco in the 70s. He did the first rock ballet, the first psychedelic ballet. Like they were like pioneers of the ballet form in San Francisco. My mom was his prima ballerina, and
wow,
you know, they're big people in the San Francisco arts scene. And so the fact that I've never come home with a production, you know, and so I get to come home and I get to do this production. I get to play the part that I won a Tony Award for. But I was like, but, you know, maybe we can do something a little extra. Mm-hmm. And so since they wanted to have 8 shows for the week, they said, well, why don't you play Hedwig once a week? And I was like, yeah, okay. That sounds about
like, that's
right.
What
that
I
sounds
needed.
Exactly. So, yeah. But I wouldn't do it unless I could do it on a 2-show day. So the idea was, because I only get to play Hedwig once a week, you know, you're kind of going into the show in that character cold. And so I need a show to warm up into that show. So I was like, I'm only going to do it on a 2-show day. So I'm going to play Yitzhak for the matinee. And then because the end of the way of Yitzhak, the way that character ends, is a perfect, like, it's a perfect way to get into Hedwig and to do my one show of week as Hedwig. And so, and then on top of all that, I'm going to be doing a bunch of other things. I'm sure I'm going to be doing some shows on the days off, and I'll probably be like doing, you know, like a lot of community stuff since I was in the community theater in San Francisco. And I'm also trying to document my house that I grew up in San Francisco, because I'll just keep going.
Good,
2017 is the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love in San Francisco. And my house is still very much a relic of that. My dad, you know, because there's like tons. I mean, the house is just eclectic, does not even begin to describe the house I grew up in. My parents are still there. All the stuff from the 60s, it's all still there, but just piled on more. Like, you know, it's like from the 60s till now, just, I mean, it's a massive amount of, and it's a magical place. And I was like, we should definitely document this house and the story of this house and my parents in like a book. So I'll be also doing that while I'm home. I'll be having this amazing photographer who's a still photographer come in, and she's going to be taking photos, and I'm going to be interviewing my parents, and we're going to just be telling. So it'll be a little biography
so
of this
beautiful.
This house that has seen so many things. So.
Wow.
All right. Oh, I'm in San Francisco.
On a vacation.
How long are you going to be out there for?
And I'm so excited. A month. And then
what?
I'm in LA for
a month.
Yeah. And then I'm in LA for a month.
But like, doing, not doing Hedwig also.
Yes, doing Hedwig. I get to do it in LA too. Okay. So I'll get to
do
it.
Did it take convincing for them to say, okay, yeah, you're going to do one role, except for one show,
right? Yeah,
the other role, like, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was
amazing. I mean,
it was kind of like they tossed around me playing Hedwig for a while, but like, I don't have a big enough social media following in order to sell out an entire run.
Have women played Hedwig?
Ally Sheedy did at the end of the original production. She closed it, and it was apparently not such a great thing. I didn't see it.
I didn't know she was a singer.
I've heard stories. I've heard stories, and you know, whatever. It's like, I'm sure she did her take on it. Apparently, she would go off too much, and it would be like a 3-hour show or something like that. I don't know. I've just heard stories, so it's just all hearsay. But I feel like this is like a chance to break the rules a little bit.
And of any show, to break the rules.
Yeah, exactly. I know people are confused. They're like, a man should play that. And I'm like, well, you know.
Well, shouldn't a man play Yitzhak?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, first of all, I'm playing a dude already. Like, so I don't know, you know, what anyone's like kind of. I just, it's hard to get people to break from their traditional expectation of a role. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to try and do my work the best I can, tell the story the best I can, you know, and just do what I do best on that stage. And I hope people will connect with the way that I do it, so that more women can come in and take over the world. More famous women, you know, who will be able to sell out.
More followers.
Yeah, who have more followers on social media. Eventually, maybe I'll get there where I will be able to sell out a show. Currently, we're doing one show a week, and I think I'll be fine.
I mean, the social media thing, I guess I get it, because that's the cheapest way for them to do publicity.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. But for
Someone's
Broadway,
tweeting out
I mean,
the show to their followers.
Think- I mean, I understand that the celebrity culture has completely taken over Broadway.
Yeah, but,
yeah, that's one thing.
I mean, that's part of it.
I mean, Cats, you know, they cast Leona Lewis, who...
Is Cats back?
Cats is coming back, you guys. Cats I did. I was in the...
You were in Cats.
I was in Cats. It was my
is
first...
Is that the best?
Oh, my God. For anyone, you know, everyone's making fun of that show and coming back.
I mean, it just seems so fun to do.
I know, right? It is a blast to do. And there was even a post... There was somebody like put a piece of paper that said like stop cats in Williamsburg. Like we're going to have like a picketing thing or we're going to stop cats, which is hilarious. But like, you know, when it all comes down to it, the score is really beautiful. But the dancing, and I'm really excited about because the caliber of dancer from back in my day mm-hmm. to now is like a massive leap. And they've cast all these amazing dancers, and if you're gonna see anything, I mean, that show is a dance show, and yeah. all these people are incredible dancers, so it's gonna be beautifully danced wow. show. I mean, and the music is beautiful. The music is beautiful.
Same choreography as before?
I think so. I saw clips of the London online, and it was the same choreography that I remember. I think Andy Blankenbuehler is like adding to, or I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm actually looking forward to seeing it. Yeah. It'll be like a walk down memory lane.
Yeah,
get it.
That's a trip. It's funny that it has enough of like the stigma that people are trying to pick it. That's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, that people care enough.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like if you don't like it, then you just don't like it. Whatever. You don't care about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's worth seeing to see these dancers because I looked at the cast and I was doing my research because I care about the show because it was my first Broadway show and it always will have such a major place in my heart, and which is strange to say, but it will.
I probably most shows do, but it's certainly your first one if it was a good experience.
And talk about kicking your ass. I mean, doing that show 8 shows a week, was really difficult on one's body in a very different way than like the singing thing.
Right.
But
when did you stop ballet?
when I got Cats.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was a ballerina in a ballet company until I was until I turned 18, which is when I went on tour with Cats and then went to Broadway with Cats and then I stopped doing ballet.
So you were deep in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Was Broadway the dream as you were studying ballet so seriously, or what were you dreaming of?
What was I dreaming of? God knows what I was dreaming of. I was dreaming of Broadway.
I mean, were you taking voice lessons too, or was it really dance that you were focused on?
I was doing musical theater with the community theater that I was involved in, like all the time, which was a great theater program in San Francisco. And so I knew I wanted to perform. And I didn't really know exactly like what that was going to entail. I just knew I wanted to perform. And so when I came to Broadway, I mean, yes, Broadway was a massive deal because I did absolutely break down and sob when I got the job, like
really?
Break down in the middle of the street, like yelling and screaming. People thought something was wrong, like bad wrong. I was like, oh my God.
Is it like a cold, like open call and you're like, and then you get it and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. In San Francisco, 17, when I auditioned, and it was like a call and they were like, coming out on tour in 2 weeks. I was like, oh my God, I ran down the street. I was working at a kid's store in Haight-Ashbury and I like ran down to see my sister's boyfriend at the time who was working down the street because he was the only person I knew who was nearby.
Is that right? Yeah.
And I ran over to him and I opened the door to his shop and I was like, Cats called! And like sobbing.
So you bypassed school then?
Yeah.
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 Straight into that work life.
Straight into that work life. And I love it, you know. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about, you know, kind of pushing yourself to an extreme, and again, it's like doing Cats 8 shows a week. It was definitely pushing yourself to an extreme every single day, and I love that. There's something that I find so enjoyable.
Yeah,
about like
I feel like maybe you wouldn't have done that well like 4 years in liberal arts school anyway.
Yeah, right.
You might have gotten really fucking restless after a semester.
I don't think I would have stuck in school for very long. I think I would have been doing my own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, how were you in high school?
I was busy.
Were you busy at schoolwork or other stuff?
All of the above. I mean, I was busy at schoolwork when I cared.
Right. Okay.
Like I cared about math and chemistry and physics. That's what I cared about.
Oh, that is what you cared about?
That's what I cared about. Weird. Yeah. Yeah. I was like,
interesting.
I hated, you know, learning about how to form a sentence. Like, that was not interesting to me. Or like history.
Yeah.
Like, but that might have been my school. I went to an arts high school.
So, okay.
Yeah. The day was, you know, we did stuff in the day, and then at regular stuff in the day. And then after lunch, we all did our art. So I'd go off to dance class. And I mean, I was in a ballet company, so I was always rehearsing, and I was constantly doing something.
Yeah.
So it is always constant.
What was your house like growing up? Was it a bunch of like bohemian people hanging out with your parents?
Yeah.
All working on really cool shit.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Lots of artists, a lot of like the LGBTQ community.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had transgender nannies and that was the norm for me. I had drag queen, you know, aunts and uncles, and it was just the way I grew up. And so to me, it was kind of normal, but like for other people, I'm sure they would, like other people in the middle America would be like, oh my God, you're insane.
For anywhere else. I mean, it is crazy then how everything that's happening to you right now and everything that you're doing is such a product of everything that you've done in mm-hmm. life.
Right.
It didn't happen by accident. It wasn't just the band situation that made you say, oh, I'm into this rock thing.
Right, and, yeah.
I mean, the whole gender, queer identity stuff, that's been part of your life all this time. It's like,
yeah.
How could you have imagined that that would come to you, you know? Professionally.
I had no idea. Like, I mean, no one could ever have a clue what comes to them professionally. But
I mean, it's almost like you put something. Oh shit! Sorry. <Jesus Christ. laughs> It's like my first rodeo. Like that was a, I mean, in a way, a destiny or something that you could have. You know, something about your path was driving you in these directions, which
right.
you can't plan for.
No.
I mean, who even knew Hedwig would be back on Broadway or?
No, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah.
Right. But you really like amazing. Went after that role in Hedwig, right?
Yeah, I went after that.
You saw it.
Because I knew, okay. Yeah, because I just knew. I love that show so much and I wanted to be a part of it. And I knew that, like, I just wanted to, I don't know, I just wanted that part so bad. I just wanted to be part of it so bad because that show is something that it means so much to me. I'm so very passionate about that show. There's not a lot of shows that come that way. And a lot of people ask me why I haven't come back to Broadway yet. Because I'm...
How long has it been?
I left in April of last year.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had opportunities.
Uh-huh.
But I am waiting for... Or I'm just, you know, I'm looking for that one show again that pierces me, that pierces my soul, something that I'm passionate about. Because if you do put in this much time, you really want to love what you're doing and mm-hmm. you really want to be able to pour your heart and soul into it because that's what's fair for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the audience doesn't want to spend that much money to see something that's kind of half done.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see something spectacular. They want to see someone pouring out their heart and soul on that stage every day. They want to see someone giving to them so they can give back. And so I've been kind of, you know, I've been very carefully kind of trotting everything to see if there's something that it affects me in that same way. And it's hard because, you know, it's such an incredible show. It's one of those shows that's a little bit hard to beat. But there is something that I'm like so passionate about and I'm just kind of waiting to see where they're going with it. So,
the works?
Yeah, I'm like on them. I'm like, hey, hey, it's me again. So I really want this because I love it. You know, please.
Yeah.
And it's like a perfect thing for me, but it just depends on, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Which way they go. Again, there's a lot of politics involved and a lot of, you know, a lot involved as far as like how many followers you have or how big of a fan base you have or this and that. So it's not only about talent, unfortunately, in this community, but it's also about, you know, your reach. And to star in a show, you have to kind of meet all the criteria. That's why I'm hoping.
Right.
Yeah.
So does a big part of your brain and like your time go towards how do I build that up? I mean, how much is your work that now, building up your...
Well, I'm lucky because I have a little bit of time on my hands before I kind of conquer these big projects coming my way. And what I've noted, like just recently, I've kind of locked my mind into that that social media kind of attitude, because I have seen things, you know, not go my way, you know, based on a certain few factors, and now I'm kind of like, all right, well, this is something I can kind of control, so this is something that I can kind of like start working on.
That's a good attitude. I feel like I would get really pissed off.
You can't. Yeah, I mean, you can initially.
Yeah,
you can and be frustrated, but then you have to look.
You got to figure it out.
Yeah, you got to look and you got to see. Well, how can I make this a positive thing? Like, how can I? It's like a breakup, you know. It's like,
yeah.
And it's like when someone says,
"Lessons can be learned from this."
Yeah, and when someone's like, "Well, I don't want you," you're like, "Well, how can I get revenge on this person? I hate them." You know what I mean? It's it's like, but then that revenge almost becomes like, oh, it's
willpower to do.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah. Things to like, oh wait, you know, all right, well, I'll show them. Like, right. You know what I mean? It's like, well, I'll show them. And so, you know, I've been working on certain things. I'm working on this YouTube series, which I'm really excited about. And just because of the way I am and kind of the workhorse that I am, it's something that will be very different than what anyone else can do. It's something that will push the boundaries and
creating like your presence, what you do with
I do with the internet, what I do with like YouTube, it will be something totally different. I mean, with, you know, Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff, it's a bit more you know, it's like picture. It's like, hey, I went to the beach, you guys. Right. Amazing.
I see you on Snapchat. Like, yeah. You're having fun.
My Snapchat filters got a little bit out of whack. So I kept like saving. I'd be like, oh my God, this is cute. I'd save it and then I'd post it everywhere, which isn't what you're supposed to do with Snapchat. Well, but, you know, whatever.
I kind of do.
I was like, really, I love the dog app. I'm into dogs, whatever. but at this, you know, so I've been working on just kind of that and the general of that. And actually being able to put out my own content. So I do all these shows out in New York all the time. Mm-hmm. And people take video and those people post that video and all the views, you know, go to them. And that's all well and good. But again, I am the product on the thing. So now I have to start taking control of that. And so I'm going to be doing that for myself as well.
Although if a video of you has a lot of views, that looks good for you. Doesn't matter if it's your page or not, right?
You would think, but I think what the problem is that people will view that video like a million times, but they won't go and follow me on Twitter. They won't go to my Instagram. You know what I mean? So it's a matter of trying to get everybody in one little area so that they come to me and they, you know, and then I have tons of subscribers or I have tons of followers because they're looking for the content that I'm releasing and not the content other people are releasing that is of mine. I mean, I know there are some videos that I have that have a ton of views and you know, I don't get any of that credit like at all. So
there is a video of you and Andrew Reynolds doing Midnight Radio. Is that the song?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I watched it like 5 times last
night. You did?
Yeah. Because I haven't seen the show, unfortunately, which is crazy and sad.
Oh my God, come to San Francisco.
I want.
Come to a two-show day.
Yes.
See the matinee
double
and the night.
Header.
Do a double header.
Oh my God, that's what you need to do. Some type of like contest or like some type of user interaction where people come and like see both shows and like do something like an interview with you or like something about that, because that's so cool.
Right.
That
like
you're doing
that.
Like somehow
have drinks after the show.
Yeah. Somehow, so, and like watch you change your makeup or like do whatever you do. Like somehow highlighting the fact that that's happening is just, it's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to see if they'll let me document this whole thing because I want to do
that. Would be amazing.
It would be fun to document this, like, kind of the transition on a two show day especially, and also just like playing a man and then playing transgender, which will be very interesting. And like, I don't know, coming home and, and just like doing this for my home and all my like parents, friends, it's a documentary. And family.
Like, vlog it up. Like,
yeah, I gotta docu it out. Documentary it up.
That's the thing.
Vlog. Yeah, are vlogs happening?
I think they were. I don't know if they ever were really cool, but like, you know, this is what you need, a docu series.
Yeah, docu series. I should do a docu series on that.
Fascinating. I would watch that.
Yeah.
I might as well. Yeah.
Do you have any friends who can like just follow you around with the camera?
I do.
There you go. Get it. Someone who's out of work, has some time on their hands.
Yeah, I'll just be like, here's some money.
I'll like buy you some booze. And
it would be like the trippiest month. And then with your parents' house and the community. It's just, that would be
I could just amazing. Do a docu of everything. I would look so amazing.
Yeah, it's just like all my doing. Like, I just
will come out,
just shoot it all. You can edit it later any way you want.
Yeah, funny that I edit video too.
There you go.
My band has two music videos online. I did those, I produced and directed and edited them.
Holy shit!
Wow, that's what I would do. See, when I was in Kinky Boots, I had about 10 minutes of stage time in that entire show, maybe a little more, but 15 minutes or something like that. And so while I would sit backstage and I had nothing to do, I was like, well, I'm just going to learn how to edit video. Why not? And so I'd be sitting there between and I'd be dressed for my next scene and I would edit and edit and edit until like 1 minute before I'd go on stage and then I'd run on and I'd do my scene, come back, and then I'd edit.
What were
more.
You editing on?
I was just using Final Cut Pro.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I became so good at Final Cut Pro that I couldn't use anything else.
To do music videos. And,
might as well pick
that
up.
That's a great skill.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Obviously, I mean, the amount of stage time is completely different in Hedwig, but like, can you imagine like a role like that? You can't just like be like, I'm on Final Cut now and I'm on my computer, I'm on social media, and then like stage.
Run out.
You know, and especially the amount of focus that you're going to need for these two roles. It's just like blowing my mind. I can't wait to see this documentary.
It'll be great.
We will come out and make it for
exactly.
you.
I'll make the documentary. I'll do it. I'll find the money. I'll do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I like to just try and keep it busy. Hopefully I'll be able to do also shows. So I'm doing a Carlisle show coming up, which I wanted to talk about, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, you want to talk about that? Okay, I guess we can talk about
We don't have to. You guys can ask me questions, but I'm asking questions for myself.
No, you are here to talk about the Carlisle. Well, okay. Can I read you something from the press release? This was very fascinating to me.
Oh, my God.
Usually press releases are so boring and stupid. And I'm like, you just said that they're going to be doing something on a stage. Okay. But your show is called Oh, You Pretty Things. Mm. It's a love letter to Lena's rock and roll spirit guides, the pantheon of misfits and rebels who inspired us to transcend by transforming themselves. This intimate journey through Lena's personal love life will reveal how pivotal these artists have been in helping her navigate her relationships.
Yes.
How is that going to happen?
Well,
are you going to do a slideshow of past lovers?
I know, right? I should.
That was a request.
But that would take a day. That's like a three, you know, the Ring, the opera, the Ring, the Ring series. I don't know. It just takes place over like a week. It's like, well, it's like a show that happens over anyway. I did a show at 54 Below that was about my childhood.
Okay.
And essentially what I did for me, and I don't know, and I'm really fascinated by this idea. I know people do research on it all the time, but the way music makes us remember things, mm-hmm. certain songs make us remember certain moments in our lives or bring certain...
It's like a sense memory.
Exactly. Okay. It's a sense. It's like smell, only for me, it's much stronger than smell because it brings intense memories. And basically at the time, I always like to write what's going on in my life in the current moment. And at the time of the 54 Below show, I was talking with a life coach for the very first time. And I was kind of dealing with, you know, abandonment issues and just my own personal issues. Mm. And he would be like, well, can you remember anything traumatizing of your past and blah, blah, blah. And so through working on all that, I decided that I thought it was really interesting how the music would help me remember these moments. And and so the show I wrote was about my childhood in that house growing up, and the childhood memories that came from all the music that I heard. Like, it wasn't music that I chose to listen to. It was music that I heard that was brought to me by these intense moments in my life of growing up. And so it's kind of a, it's kind of a, the next step of that. So it would be like act two, Lena's all grown up and dating boys. And basically it's just a take on when you date someone. And this is, I think, true totally universally. When you date someone, they bring their music into your life. And you start listening to music that you wouldn't have listened to if you weren't dating that person. And then if the relationship ends, you know, you have a visceral reaction every time you hear that that artist or that song or something like that. Like, for example, I cannot listen to Billy Joel anymore. Like, I have a total, like, negative visceral reaction to Billy Joel because it brings up these very hard memories. While I have nothing against the person anymore, it just always, when I hear these songs, it just brings up, like, a specific kind of terrifying...
It's like if you get sick after you eat something, then you won't eat that thing again.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it's basically that. I mean, I'll basically, I won't be naming any names, and I won't be like, you know, it's not like a tell-all.
Stories? Is it a...
I will be telling fun stories. Okay. They'll be great stories. I've been writing it out, so now here's the
really?
Kicker.
Oh, good. Okay.
Here's the kicker. So basically what happened was I just got my heart broken really bad, and that's why I'm writing about this, because I'm like, well, what better way to heal yourself from heartbreak than to just write about it and to be creative about it. And so what's funny is I just moved to this new place, and every time I would walk down the street, I'd see one of my ex-boyfriends and be like, hey, what are you doing here? Like, you know, it'd been so long since we had hung out or talked or anything, you know? So I was just like, how are
like
you?
Like one ex in particular.
One specific
ex. Oh, I thought you meant like multiple exes.
No. This one ex in particular from a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, do you mind if we sit down and we talk candidly? Cause I can't, literally can't remember, how we met or you know, if were we in a relationship, were we boyfriend girlfriend, or like what was it, you know, like how did it end?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah, sure, we can totally talk. And he's like a really cool person, so sweet. And so he talked to me, and he was like yeah, we were pretty serious. I was like, we were? He was like, yeah, I mean,
why do you not remember?
I was like, well, a fog of like
just it's like, and he's like, wait. He's like, well, you know, I took you out to meet my parents. Like, we were really pretty serious. There was a lot of drama that happened. I was like, there was? And he's like, yeah, in fact, I lived with you. I was like, you lived with me?
This is not real.
And then as he was saying it, everything started to come back and I started to remember everything. But I needed him to jog my memory because I had no memory and recollection.
Lena, what is going on?
Yeah. Like, and what's funny is he's a writer and a director. And I was like, hey, you want to write and direct you want to help me write and direct this show? It would be perfect. So my ex-boyfriend, Stephen D'Amato, is helping me write and direct this show at the Carlisle.
About your ex-boyfriend.
About my ex-boyfriends, yeah. And he is represented in it, although, you know, I don't think we haven't finished writing it yet, so we're still kind of going through all the really juicy stories and the funny stories and what's actually worth people's time.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, he's definitely represented in there. I just don't know if there'll be like a full story for him.
But you know what his song is?
There's only so much time.
Yeah. Yeah, lady. I want to know why you didn't remember all this stuff about him.
Is this
a thing with you?
This is a thing with me, yeah. Okay. And, you know, this is something
you, like,
that
hit
I
it
actually...
and quit it, gone.
Well, this is something that this is another thing that I want to explore through doing something like writing a book.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really want to tell the whole idea of the book, but it does have to do with memory.
Okay. Wow.
And I basically, you know, want to write down my recollection of relationships, which would probably be about a page long.
Clearly. Speaking of staring at a blank page for a long time.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, I am totally fascinated with memory because I have a strange memory pattern. I tend to completely push out extreme memories. Mm. So extreme emotional memories, extreme highs, extreme lows. I push them out. So I really, all I remember is the emotion I had. I don't remember what happened.
Yeah.
And then, but I could hear any song and remember it right. like that. I can hear, you know, lyrics. I could, you know, anything to do with art,
sensory
stage, you know,
thing.
Anything like that. I can remember the weirdest little details. But when it comes to something very important in my life, yeah. it is very difficult for me to recall. And I think it's definitely a childhood thing. I'm sure that.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there was.
I'm sure there
a
was
a lot of intense stuff happening in your childhood.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. So, you know, that's. It's fascinating. I think I'm like it's again something I'm really fascinated by.
Yeah.
Do you have a good memory of the Tony?
I don't. I have to watch it on YouTube to remember.
Wow.
Like I don't.
That makes sense. To
I mean,
me,
that
though.
Does make sense.
Yeah,
like, that's one of those
like
blackout moments. Yeah. You're
yeah.
Like out of your body. You don't
yeah.
Know
out of total out of body moment. You
yeah.
know the good and the bad.
I do remember getting cats.
I remember getting cats.
Do you remember getting Hedwig?
Yes, okay. I do remember getting Hedwig.
Was it a scream?
It's kind of a scandalous thing.
Oh.
I had auditioned and we were about to go on Christmas break. And Christmas and New Year's break for everybody is incredibly long. Like, once everybody goes on break, they don't come back until like the second week of January. And you're like, argh. And so I had finished my epically long audition for Hedwig, which was an insane audition. It's now the stuff of legend, apparently.
There's
like
a
how
lot
many
of
times
components
they made you do it.
There's so many things that need to come together to make that a viable situation.
Well, yeah. I mean, I did. They asked me to tell a story as the character. They asked me to come in as Yitzhak and leave as Yitzhak. Like, just be the character the whole time. I had to sing three songs, and then I had to improvise with John Cameron Mitchell, and then I had to, like, tell a story, and then I had to, all this stuff, and answer questions and stuff, and just kind of improv in the room, and as Yitzhak. And so for the story, I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, do I tell a joke? Like, they were just like, a joke or a story, something little. So I ended up writing a 2-minute monologue about growing up in a little tiny farm town in Croatia. And it was a farm town, and it was a boom town because it was the sole provider of the yak hair for the wigs and cats.
Wow. Yes.
And that's how I knew about musical theater, and that's why I wanted to be in Rent on Broadway. My mother awesome. Died in a fire, in a yak hair fire, and I found
so
a tape of Rent,
media.
And yeah, I came to the United States, and I found that Rent was closed on Broadway, and that was like all I wanted to do was be Angel in Rent on Broadway. So
do you have this tape?
They do have the tape,
oh,
and
so
and at the end of the whole monologue, I was like, the reason why I'm here is because I have put together a Kickstarter campaign and for you to donate money so we can bring Rent back to Broadway. And I opened up my computer and just stood there, and I showed them a 2.5-minute Kickstarter campaign video that I did with voiceover on the street, everything about bringing Rent back to
as Yitzhak.
All as Yitzhak.
You are going to get that role.
Yeah.
You were after it.
So literally, I did this between shows of Kinky Boots. Shit. So I played like this prissy British girl, turned into Yitzhak, did this audition, and ran back to my show and did the night show. Like, my audition was 40 minutes long.
Wow.
And so I was just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. I was like, there's no way they can't cast me. It was so good. Like, did I mess up? Like, what do they want? What am I doing? And I got a Facebook message from one of the casting directors that was like, I'm so glad you're joining us. And I was like, what?
They hadn't told you.
And no, they hadn't told
me. So that's how it came, like a
that's
backwards
how I found
thing.
Out. And then I was like,
did
I
you tell
like,
the casting director that you didn't know, or did you play it off like you knew?
No, I was like, what? Like, I don't understand. And then he was just like, oh my god, please just don't tell anyone, whatever. And I was like what? And I had to call my manager.
You're like, is it real?
Yeah, I had to call my manager, and I guess my agent had gotten the offer, he just didn't tell me. And I was like, are you
so
kidding
not a big
me
deal.
It was like,
wait till Monday.
It could wait till like the first week of January, like the second week of January. This is we were
as
going
as an agent
to,
you'd think he'd be the person yeah. would be so excited.
Yeah, it's like the best day
was,
of his job too.
Yeah,
it was a little little hard. But okay. But then I was like, okay, you know, like I can deal with my Christmas and New Year's break. Like yeah. Totally cool now.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So Carlisle.
So yeah, Carlisle.
June 14th to the 25th.
Dude, it's going to be.
Can the Carlisle handle you? Well, you've played it already.
Yeah, I've done. This is my third show.
Oh, your third show.
Yeah, my third show. The first one I did was Sin and Salvation. And and I'm actually going to sing a song that I did for that show. And I did a live album release. And what was interesting about that show was I did it the week after I left Hedwig. And what most people don't tell you is when they do 8 shows a week, constant, nonstop, the minute they stop, their body just deteriorates into hell. And I had bronchitis the entire time I did the Carlisle run. And so what's on the recordings, I have this like, you know, there's like this
huskiness.
I almost didn't release it because I was like, I can't release this. Sounds like crap. I don't know. And then I was like, okay, I'll release it because it's a moment in time. It's a real live album. And
you were really almost dying.
Yeah.
Do you have a secret to surviving that and getting through it?
I just did it. I don't know. I literally had no voice. If there's any time that I am like, there's a kryptonite yeah. for my voice, some people are like, you're not human, blah, blah, blah. It's when I have bronchitis because the coughing and you can't take big, deep breaths that
you're
really
human.
Need.
You're
human.
Yeah, like that's like, normal.
It was really hard. I would like cross my heart and hope to die before I would go on every show. Somehow I just got through it. I would place things in weird places and like just get through it. And I got through it without getting nodes or hurting myself at all. But I mean, it was a struggle for sure.
That's very stressful.
It was a struggle for sure. So I'm really excited to go back and
yeah, knock on wood.
Yeah.
And fix your allergies
sick.
And be well and yeah.
I have a question about we've had different opinions on this.
Yeah.
Especially in such a small space like the Carlisle. I guess it's different if you're on bigger stages, but in the Carlisle specifically, do you mind if people take video on their phones while you're performing?
You know, I don't know. I don't really mind the photos and like a little bit of video here and there. Like I don't mind that stuff appearing because I think it's kind of cool and people like to find that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like little, you know, it's like the little Easter eggs that you find when someone performs.
Totally.
What I do mind though is someone texting or checking their phone or videoing the entire thing.
Yeah. Right. That's not cool.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
If you have your phone up for a minute and you're filming something because you think it's special and you want to remember it.
Doesn't bother you.
You should post a sign that says you can video this, but then you must send it to Lena Hall.
Yeah, exactly. And I will post it. Yeah, exactly. I'll post
it.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about it. I think that the Broadway art form is extremely important too. And live performance is really important to preserve. It's hard to find an extremely good live performer who's actually really good. It's a dying art form because everything is videoed, everything is edited, everything is like glossy.
Well, what
and glossed
do you think
over.
Makes a really good live performer?
it's a number of things.
Okay,
because to be honest, I think Britney Spears is an amazing live performer, and the reason why she's amazing is because she dances her heart out and she is making you live like you want to watch her. You're interested even though she's lip singing. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's
people,
not part of the criteria in terms of.
Well, for her, it's a different thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not about that. For her, it's about flipping her amazing hair and like dancing and like she's
using
sexy
what you got.
And I love that, you know, and she commands the stage that way, you know, or another live performer, a singer who can stand there and command the stage with their voice. But there's a story going on. There's something going on. It's not dead. There's like an energy that happens that is a total visceral thing that the audience feels as well. And I've seen performers where they don't know how to perform and they maybe have a good voice, but it's kind of falls dead.
Yeah.
There's like a dead face thing or they don't really know how to use their body. They're awkward or, you know, it just doesn't. And you can color, you can put as much stuff on that as you want and you can paint that as in as many ways as you can. But at the end of the day, I think that if you were to strip all of it down, they would never be able to compete, like ever.
Right.
And so that I think that, like, this is just my opinion, obviously, but, you know, a good live performer is someone who can just draw an audience in and doesn't need all the hoopla. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Britney Spears, she's a dancer, so she needs, you know, she needs the dancers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there is something about her, even when she sings her little songs and sitting on a bench, there is something about her that she'll draw you
magnetic,
in. She tells
yeah.
a little story.
Yeah.
There's pop stars that I've seen that are just, like, completely poopy dead, right. and you're like, right. You know.
You just came off tour with Josh Groban?
Yeah.
How was that?
Oh, it was awesome.
Did you sing?
He took me way out of my comfort zone. He's like, you're going to sing All I Ask of You. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. So I sang opera with him and it was so fun. We did that. We did If I Loved You. And then we also sang a Sondheim show from Sunday in the Park with George called Move On.
How did that happen? Why were you on the album or what?
No. He saw one of the first previews of Hedwig and he followed me on Twitter and I was like, and that was before anything had happened. So I had like 1,000 followers maybe. And I was like, Josh Groban, like, what up, dude? Like, why are you following me? You know, what's up? He's like, oh, I was at your show. It was amazing. You were amazing. And so I followed him back and then we ended up messaging and then we ended up becoming friends and then we ended up hanging out and he's like a dude, he's my boy. Yeah, he's so sweet and he's got a great heart and he's just a fan of mine
and a crazy voice.
He's a beautiful voice.
Incredible.
And like he was just like I actually made a joke because he texted me one day randomly, and this is right as the album was coming out, his Stages album, and he was like, "Hey, your ears are burning because I, you know, every time someone asks me what my dream duet would be, like who it would be with, I say you. You're one of the people I mentioned." I'm like, aww. "Well." I was like, well, what the fuck, dude? When are you going to ask me to sing something with
Why
you?
Why is that
like,
a dream?
Yeah. Hello. And it was just kind of a joke. But then he was like, do you want to sing with me at like Time Warner Center on Tuesday? I was like, oh, sure. And then it was like, it was All I Ask of You and all that kind of stuff. And then from that, he asked me to do the U.S. Open with him. And then from the U.S. Open, we did the tour together. And,
cool.
And it was just
fun.
It was really fun.
Different and fun.
I sang two pretty like head voicey songs and then I sang two. He let me do two of my own off the Carlisle album. So I could kind of show the audience what I do, you know, how much of a range that I do have and the difference and stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm looking forward to the Carlisle show, I think. Like
it's
like such a cross. It's not hard rock or anything like that. It's not what people would imagine. You know, it's like I still respect the space of the Carlisle because it is such
it's not a hard
like
rock venue yet.
Yeah, no, not yet, not yet. No, it won't. It's like I still respect the space of the Carlisle. It's it's taking music that maybe these people wouldn't necessarily listen to and feeding it to them in a way where they're going to kind of connect with the music better or in a way that'll make them appreciate maybe this form a little better. Because the Carlisle, they for the longest time they saw standards and it was all just Broadway and, you know, just love songs and blah, 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 you know. And then I came in and I kind of started messing with their typical like crowd and showing them music that they wouldn't necessarily listen to.
Right.
I mean, in my first Carlisle show, I did a Meat Puppets song.
How'd that go?
You know what I mean? Oh, I loved it because it was done in a way that was very, you know, ethereal.
Palatable,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it was palatable for the space. And so, you know, I did just recently with Michael C. Hall, we did...
the Radiohead thing?
Yeah, we did one show. It was the Carlisle. They were like, we have a space, like we had a cancellation. Do you want to do a show last minute? It's in like 2 weeks or something. And I was like, sure. And they were like, do you have anyone you would want to work with and bring? And I was like, let me think about it. And the first thing I thought of was Michael C. Hall, because I've I want to work with him again. We have very much of a mutual love for each other, like respect, you know, kind of thing like that. And I was like, I want to, how could I hook him where he couldn't say no? I was like, how can I get him where, you know, I know he'll be like, yeah, I want to do that. And so I was like, Hey Michael, what are you free like this day? Do you want to do a show with me at just the two of us at the Carlisle All Radiohead? And he's like, yeah. So we did two rehearsals and a sound check, and it ended up being one of the best nights because it really pushed him a little bit because I made him do 7 songs and from the 3 that I originally agreed to. and it also, like, the audience, the way we did the Radiohead songs was we stripped down everything out of them, mm-hmm. all the weirdness that they usually put on it, and just showed the songs for what the songs right, really are, which are amazing,
yeah.
and beautiful and just sad and ethereal, and
yeah.
and the audience just loved it. Michael and I want to do it again. We want to do it again, but with like another artist, mm-hmm. you know, but he's so busy, so I don't know if we'll be able to find the time again, but if we can, we'll do it again. We'll do like Bowie,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Or, but if you strip anything down and get it to the lyrics and the melody, and it's like, you can really
good.
Take anything, yeah, right, anything
oh,
good,
but
anything
can work at the Carlisle.
Well, yeah. not always true.
Okay.
not sure. always true. Believe me, there's some songs that you try. Not
okay. It's not right. Not everything works that way, but
you'd be surprised.
Arrangements,
you'd be surprised.
Yeah. Like count for a lot.
Do you know what song works really well stripped down?
What?
Hotline Bling by Drake.
I believe that because of that video that W Magazine did with the actors Dude. Doing the dramatic reading of it.
Yeah.
See, that was like Bryan Cranston. And so, yeah.
Oh, it's yeah, really, it's one of those songs where you're like, wait a minute, yeah. this weirdly works is like yeah. just a stripped down cute song. Anyway.
I have a pop quiz.
Oh, yeah.
Besides singing at the Carlisle, what do Lena Hall and Judy Collins have in common?
I don't even know.
Beautiful blue eyes.
and being on Soul Sisters. Yeah. They were both on Girls.
Oh.
And we'd be remiss not to mention that you were on Girls this season.
I was on Girls this season.
Fucking awesome.
Did you
Speaking
like
of another thing that you just committed the fuck out of. How did that happen? How did you get that part?
I auditioned.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I had to audition with that scene.
Wow. Well, yeah. They had to know if you could do it.
Yeah. And
what is the scene again?
She was she was the yoga instructor at the women's retreat that Hannah and her mom go
Holy
to.
Holy shit.
Dude. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, that ends in some serious
self-loving. That was a serious episode. Well done.
It's some serious stuff. So I remember I was like, I got the scene and I was like,
did you audition with
that
Lena?
Is
no, okay. I just auditioned in an audition room. You know, it was a bit awkward. Auditions are a bit awkward, but
yeah, the worst.
It was one of those things. I was with my friend. I was like, okay. I was like, how can I play that? Like, how can I do this? So it's, how am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to make this work? And I was like, okay, well, it's Girls. They'll just, whatever I do, it's just got to be 100% because
yeah,
they
yeah.
don't want half-assed. They want someone who's just going to go for it,
yeah.
right? And I was like, well, I just have to go for it. I can't be self-conscious. Like, I just have to go for it. I can't, like, stop myself and, like, get all weird and self-conscious.
What
so.
Scene was it that they gave you?
That
the
scene,
the sex
yeah.
scene. Okay.
sex scene.
And so...
Not that you can keep your phone scene.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Well,
yeah.
They gave me, you know, they gave like, me another scene to do with, yeah. you know, as just like a regular, like a warm-up scene. Right. And then it was okay. like, boom, all right. And I was like, well, if I was a yoga instructor, like, and I was super into it, like super into yoga and health, like, I would probably incorporate that into my orgasm and like the height of things. So... So for my audition, I basically counted down like a yoga teacher would if you're in a position,
uh-huh.
you know, like just ever increasing with the pants and the orgasm and the thing like that. And but when I got to the peak, I said, namaste, motherfucker, and like collapsed on the floor and then, you know, and then started sobbing. And I literally got the job 5 minutes after.
Wait, but that was in the script, the namaste and the
sobbing? No, I made that up. Like,
but I wish they kept
sobbing,
that.
The sobbing was in. It was the countdown that I did because I was like 30 more seconds because she says 30 more seconds. Like, no, just 30 more seconds. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, 30 more seconds. Well, that's like a thing that we do when you're doing yoga and you're like holding a pose and you're like trying to like work through it and you're like counting
down. Your muscles are shaking, but you're trying to keep it together.
Yeah. You know, and
totally
then,
the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And then like 5 minutes later, they told you.
Yeah, I mean, just a little bit later, they called my agency. They were like, yes, okay.
Oh my God.
And we filmed that scene multiple times. And it was a closed set, but there were a lot of people around. And
was it very hot?
It was not.
Okay.
Yeah, it was not very hot.
Good acting. Good acting.
It was not very hot, but I mean, well, first of all, Lena Dunham and that entire crew, they're so sweet, and it was a cool family to work with.
Yeah.
And they're just open, and they don't, you know, they're just like, yeah, just do, yeah.
The line in that scene that kills me is when she's like, I've never had sex with a woman before. I mean, I went to Oberlin, I did some stuff, I'm not a monster, which is like so spot on for those kinds of colleges.
Yeah, it's such a good scene. We did that, you know, over and over again.
Oh, fuck yeah! I didn't realize that was great.
Yeah, yeah. And at the end of the filming that day, I was very lightheaded and felt woozy. But I was, you know, I was like, you guys, this is good.
Thanks
for having me. I'm really happy.
Did that get you some more followers? That was a thing that was written up a bunch. Yeah,
yeah. Pride did a thing on me.
There you go.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I booked a few things from that, and I don't know. It was a great it was like a perfect little like introduction to kind of me as an actor on TV, film. So,
and John Cameron Mitchell's been on Girls, and Andrew Reynolds. And it's funny. It's a little.
It's we're like
family.
It was the publisher died, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So funny.
Yeah,
it's a good little family. I was sad I didn't have any scenes with Andrew.
Yeah,
but you know, it was still cool to be a part of that family.
Yeah,
Girls is like the new Law and Order. Like every aspiring actor gets a role on Girls.
Aspiring,
shaking her head. No, but like most like great actors in New York have like a story about being on Law and Order.
Okay, you're right. Yeah,
you guys, seriously,
I'm not calling Randall.
Never been on Law and Order. I've been in for Law and Order, but I don't know. Maybe I'm too funny to be on Law and Order.
You ain't nothing yet, man.
I know.
Come back when you have your
SVU
role.
Card. Oh, yeah. God. I got to get my SVU card, you guys. Maybe I'll just surpass the whole Law and Order
I think you're good.
Yeah. You're doing all right. Doing okay.
I'm working on that. Again, I'm working on my social media, so right. I can be an undeniable hire.
Certified.
SVU.
Yeah. All right, Lena, thank you.
Totes.
For joining
this
the
is amazing.
Show.
Yeah,
thank awesome. You so much.
What are you singing for us today?
I'm going to sing a song that's on the Carlisle album, the Sin and Salvation one. I also did it on tour with Josh a lot. And it's called It's a Man's World. Well, it's a man's world, to be technically
right,
clear.
There's a lot of meaning here.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite songs to sing because to me, I guess, because it's such like a man-woman thing.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's actually when you sing a song, when you switch the person who's singing a song, sometimes you really switch the meaning. When you switch the gender of the person singing the song. Like, I don't switch the words. I just switch the person who's singing it. And so I think that it brings a whole new meaning to the song. And it's also it's a female empowerment song. I'm all about women. And being empowered. I'm all about women's rights. I think that I'm a little scared currently because we've been taking a bit of a step backwards as far as women's rights is concerned. Mm-hmm. And
go out and vote, kids.
Yeah. And it's a little scary. And we have to keep fighting. I mean, there's other things that are being fought for, you know, gay rights and the LGBTQ community and Black Lives Matter and all that kind of stuff. There is all of that still going on. But us women need to stick together as well and remember that we're going backwards a little bit and we need to start watching out for each other more. And we need to, you know, girl power needs to come back. I think the Spice Girls should come back.
Yeah. Soul Sisters.
Yeah.
Soul Sisters.
Thank you for joining Soul Sisters.
Thank you.
Soul Sisters, baby.
This is a man's world.
Mal made the call to take us over the road, and Mal made the train to carry the heavy load, and Mal made the electric light to take us out of the dark, and Mal made the boat for water like Noah made the ark. This is a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing without a woman or a girl. Oh, yeah. Mal, think about a little bitty baby girl and a baby. See, Mal make them happy, 'cause Mal make them toys. And after Mal make everything, everything can, you know that Mal make a money to buy from other men. Oh, this is a man's world.
Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.